You know, we have elves and dragons and goblins, so you mean to tell me that nowhere in the world is a brown elf? Are you serious? So things like that where this exclusion, this assumption, but it's fantasy, it's just a game. It's like, well, for me it's not just a game. And when people say that to me, I give them that, you know, like that mom look that you get right before she might have come and quiet on me. Because it makes me unwelcome. If I go into a store and there's just people who look like Raphael, and the women and people of color, and the ones like Carlos or Megan, that is a very clear signal to me that my money is not good enough for you. And, you know, I've gone to Gen Con twice and never played a game. I've only played games at conventions where I know the people at the table. Because it's a matter of trust, and a lot of times I can't trust that because when you don't have to think about it, you don't have to realize that this is an extension of what I deal with on an everyday basis, and at least for me, I don't want that at the table. Putting it in there, especially without my consent, is a big red flag and pushes me out.
So basically, don't take a colonialist narrative and or any other common tropes that people might assume, or, you know, less translucent phenotypes than me.
So basically, don't put all these bullshit in your game. You're like, but you want to be brown. This is what you know, right? And I'm like, no, I would rather be a royal elf that is going to murder all of your brothers.
I think that's a really, like, the fact that it is fantasy, and it can be anything you want. The game that I play in, we had this issue where our game master was making every female the exact same character, to the point, like, we sort of made a joke about it, and he would say, well, no, it's not that way. And when we started outlining how, like, every female character, especially if they were in power, was a horrible human. They were just terrible people. And he was like, one of his things was, he's like, well, because she was a woman, she had to prove her, then he kind of stopped. He's like, oh, I've made up this world. I don't have to have it where women haven't been equal from the start. And to his credit, he changed everything, but we as players had to point this out to him several times. And so, like, that'd be something else, too. It's like, again, with the conversation, listen to your fellow players, listen to your game master too, of like, if you're always doing this, if they're saying it and they're seeing a pattern, there's probably a pattern there. And so you gotta listen to that and think about, what does that say? Because, you know, if we don't work with intention on building our worlds and coming up with our NPCs and coming up with the narratives, biases are going to come in there. And that's generally what we want, because it is a fantasy world, and we can put better stuff into it than we have in our world. We can imagine a better world, and so why not create that to play in?
In addition to populations already mentioned, what we've seen a lot is, of course, wheelchair and other physical disabilities, such as muscular dystrophy, cerebral palsy, various brain injuries. A lot of facilities, and including game stores and homes, aren't accessible, despite the ADA and such. Even if you can get through the door, or, you know, even if there aren't step issues and such, there can be pinch points all over the place. The way you organize the shelves and the tables and even the tables, you know, they don't sit right. You can't get very close. Pinch points are a thing. So pinch point is where it's, yeah, you can kind of get the wheelchair through, but if you have to hand operate the chair, you have a high risk of injury. It's a really common issue. When we've helped as accessibility advocates at various conventions, we literally go through with a tape measure and try to make sure every angle is wide enough that people can get around, just to the restaurants, to the bathrooms, to the event floors, etc., making sure there's room to get to the chairs and such in the auditoriums and such. Also, foreign language in different cultures is another big issue. If they're not English speaking as a primary language, that can be a challenge. And so if you're running a community center and other places that are meant to be open to the public, it's challenging. I mean, we're constantly trying to find signing, you know, game masters, and it has been a challenge. I can find people who sign great, and I can find people who GM very well. Very few can sign well enough to run a game. I used to be able 2 years ago, but my practice is, it's all fallen out of my head. So the deaf community is heavily excluded. They're highly isolated to begin with. They're 1.5 times more likely to experience violence and sexual abuse than their same peers. So if you looked at non-deaf women versus deaf women, 1.5 times more likely, children, adults, each one, they much more likely, and far less likely to report because most people they're trying to communicate with can't sign, and it's difficult to write, and often there's other disabilities. Also, visually impaired has some of the challenges. We've got here Braille dice, and we'll, I guess we'll talk about that later, but different devices to help with that. And then also, unfortunately, very commonly, you'll hear gamers say at events, just because somebody's very different looking, oh, well, they look really weird, I don't want them at my table. Or they're offensive in some way, I don't like the t-shirt they're wearing, whatever, I don't want them at my table. That's a huge form of exclusion, and we hear it all the time. It happens a lot. And, you know, just being judged by appearance and not giving people even a chance to even communicate. Now, if they get to the table and they're offensive and they're causing problems, that's one thing. That's their behavior. Judge them on their behavior. But just because they're expressing themselves differently in other ways, be careful about, you know, because a lot of times that's open to interpretation, too. They may have a completely different meaning for that particular T-shirt. Maybe they're doing it ironically. So these are things that we hear all the time as exclusions for a lot of gamers. Something to keep
question.
In mind.
If that is a clearly racist thing on your shirt, why should I give you the benefit of the doubt?
Well, again, some of that's going to be up to interpretation because it might be the region they're from has a completely different meaning. So not racist, but I'll give you an example. The Got Root T-shirt, which originally started as a tech joke, which is about root system administration access. Right, it's a tech joke, no problem. In Australia, that means you have sex. It's totally related to male genitalia and such. Had no idea. Lots of people up here in North America have no idea that in Australia it means something completely different. So, yes, if it says something very, 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 very overtly, it's very clear there's no room for interpretation, which is very difficult in language, but if there's no room for interpretation, that's one thing. But be careful, because you'd be surprised how cultural differences can work in so many different directions.
But one of the things I'm hearing is judging on behavior.
That's the critical.
Language is a form of behavior.
Okay. Well.
And that is something that we, you know, you're saying something you said earlier. Don't judge based on initial appearances, but by people's behavior. There's another point that people have brought up. And that's the idea that it seems unspoken, but this is more work. And being a DM is hard enough.
Yes.
It sounds like you're asking people to work harder as DMs. Why are you asking them to work harder as DMs?
And players.
Because it makes you a better person.
Oh, we come back to that again.
And more opportunities. the variety of people that are being excluded can bring wonderful new perspectives and experiences to your game that you might never have experienced otherwise.
It's also just about being a better game master. So it's not that you're changing the way that you game master and like, oh no, this is work, I have to include people. You're actually just being a better game master. Because a good game master already is responsive, a good game master is already working with and collaborating with the players. All we're asking you to do is put extra tools in your toolkit to be more inviting, more responsive. So it doesn't have to be more work.
So you're just building up a bigger tool set.
Yeah, you have a bag of tricks you use as a game master anyway. Any game master has a set of tools that they use to be inclusive, to be inviting, to have conversations with their players. All you're doing is expanding that capacity to be more thoughtful about other kinds of representation you want to have in the game. It doesn't have to be more work. Eventually, and it especially in a society where we're regularly ingrained to have certain expectations for things, like Tanya was talking about, it does take work sometimes on the front end to go, okay, all right, I don't have to have women have B setback in my world. But once you do that, once you understand that you have an infinite capacity, then you just change the way that you do that on the front end. It doesn't take more work to not have women be subjugated.
That's a concept, isn't it? what would you say as a DM or a GM about players? Because, you know, we're already dealing with a variety of people at the table. And let's say you have a problem player who is making problems for somebody's experiences. Maybe they have physical accessibility issues and the one player just doesn't give a crap. Let's say, Tanya brings up, brought up a really valuable point earlier about trauma experiences within a storyline. They are often not necessary, and they are often superfluous and utterly gratuitous. And how do you confront and talk to a player about their apathy towards something like that? Like, you know, somebody expresses disdain, this is literally triggering to some people, and somebody says, it's just a story. How do you talk to a player and offer a learning experience as opposed to just, boom, you're done?
I have a whole video on that.
Well, this is a hard question. I mean, this is a really hard question because in a lot of respects, it is asking you to work harder. Mm-hmm. It is easier to be angry and just say, you done though. It is a lot harder to teach and to offer that opportunity to learn.
No, but like, let's quote J.K. Rowling here. We have to make the choice between doing what's right and doing what's easy.
For me, I try to talk to the player first, mm-hmm. take them aside. I mean, one thing, and granted, I know it's incredibly petty, but that's how I can be at times. One of our players is non-binary, and any time they get misgendered, I add a point of disadvantage to the player that does it. It's like, you're only going to die. So that's just a good idea. And you know what, I know it's not malicious, I know they're good people, but it's a slip up, it's like you're going to learn at this table. But it's hard because I've been very fortunate, I am very fortunate that the show that I'm on, the College Chance, is all people of color, so there's a freedom there that I've never had in any other. That we can say things to each other on and off camera, and other people, they said it, and they're like, oh, I can't watch the show anymore, because that was beyond the line, because there are experiences that we have as people of color that other people cannot emulate or understand, and they try to insert that in their game. I'm just like, well, I can't watch this show anymore, listen to podcasts. But I think it's talking to the player, and if they continue to do it, because if you can't find the empathy to treat other people that you're sharing a table with every week, every other week, with decent compassion and humility, not humility, humanity, then you can't play well with others. This is not the group for you. And if you want to go be edgelords, go, you're not going to do it here. It's like, I am not a forgiving person, unsurprisingly. And I'll give someone one, maybe two chances. And if they just really have that lack of empathy for other people, you can't come in my house, you can't be at my virtual table, because you don't care about other people. So what I do is I try talking to people, I punish them in game. If that still doesn't work, then you got to go.
Yeah, and I would like to add that it's people first before the game. The game, you can play games, like, I don't care how long this game's been going on. You could be playing with the same people for, you know, 2 weeks, it could be 2 years, it could be 20 years. When people start getting hurt, you need to just stop, and you need to talk to these people and not continue it, because then you're participating in the same abusive behavior as you're seeing at the table. And it can be hard, too, because you're wrapped up in this world as much as everyone else. It's a fun thing, and you want to save these relationships. But at a certain point, you do have to stop for the good of everyone, even yourself. Even if you're the person, you know, not the victim in this situation. Because you are, and it's emotionally draining, too. So I would just be... It's a game. And the game isn't a real person. You can stop at any time. You don't have to feed it anymore. You can put it in the closet. It is not a real person. Just keep telling yourself that. You can, you know, you built this thing with a bunch of people and it feels sacred, but you can stop at any time. And I'm drawing from my own personal experience of not wanting to stop a game when I saw abusive behavior. Because, you know, also in my particular situation, my game was wrapped up in my art and a show that I was producing that, you know, I also spent hours and hours, like 20 hours a week on. I poured, 2 years of my life into it, and it was wrapped up at the same time. And when I drilled down and started untangling this web of, like, emotions of, like, why is this so heavy? Why is this so heavy? It was just integrated in my life, and it all boiled down to a game. A game that I cherish and I want it to see succeed and carry on, but it ends. If anyone wants to know the truest Dungeons & Dragons ending, it's the one that just ends like that. because people stop coming over, people move away, people grow up, it just ends, and be okay with that.
So, but a word that Tanya corrected herself for, humility, I think is an important quality here, because there is a certain degree of humility to saying, I can change, I need to be different. How do you, and since we all have blind spots, we all have the things that we are literally ignorant of, and you can't know what you don't know. How do you, as a DM, as a player, be flexible and basically change what you need to change? If someone's like, hey, this is not working for me, and you're like, well, what are you talking about? This is what, oh. Mm-hmm. How do you encourage that in yourself and others?
So we have a standard code of conduct that we have, and the PDF's on the website, so other people can use it and modify it how they want. So it explicitly states what's acceptable and not acceptable in this particular group. And we have different versions, like one version is for broadcasts and one version is for local games for different populations. Maybe it's a younger group, it's a little bit different version. We really spell that out as explicitly as possible. We don't make everybody read all, it's not heavy in legalese, it's meant to be clear language, but we'll highlight on that very quickly at the beginning of each game. And it also explicitly states conflict and concern resolution processes, what the escalation is, the appropriate way to handle it, whether it's using X card or a post-it or something like that, and other ways to deal with problem players. And one, an old legacy one is the Blue Bolt, which is a blue 20-sided die, and you can use little warnings. You were talking about in-game punishment and such. So if somebody's being a little disruptive, this works well with kids, but also I've seen it work with adults as well. If they're starting to be disruptive, you've already given them little warnings about what the behavior is, but sometimes they forget. You can start saying, dark clouds begin to form above just your character's head. They keep doing the behavior. Little jags of lightning start shooting out here and there. Continue to not quite get the message. A lightning bolt strikes the ground a few mere inches from you, and if they don't get it, then they get struck by a lightning bolt, roll a d20, and permanent hit point loss. You know, this is, you're trying to make it a little bit fun. They're not going to be happy about it, so it is punitive, and punishment is less effective than reinforcement by far, but sometimes that can be effective for some populations. An example of why the hard work is worth it. I was running an experiment, a two-year-long experiment, on optimizing the RPG experience. I was doing room temperatures, lighting, group size, duration, all kinds of things. I had over 120 different players across many different groups I was running, many groups, a lot of groups. And two players came in who clearly did not like each other. And I didn't know, I was new to Spokane at the time, didn't know the game culture and such. And clearly didn't like each other, and it was being disruptive. And I had to talk to them separately and found out, and these guys were in their 50s or 60s, they'd hated each other since high school. They had fought each other and beat each other up back and forth since high school. Every time they came in each other's orbits, it was bad. So I was like, well, can we make this work or is this going to be a problem? And they're like, no, I can make it work. And it took a little bit of effort. It took some work talking to them and using these mediation techniques. But within a few weeks, in the game, they were making it work. And this was not a therapeutic group. This was a diversional entertainment group. I didn't have to keep them. Therapeutic groups, you got to keep them. This, I could have kicked them out for being, but they weren't being too disruptive, so I worked with them. And a few weeks, they were starting to work together. Eventually, they became the most effective duo. Now, they still did not like each other personally outside of the game. That never changed. But in the game, they became so effective. One was a hobbit, and one was a druid who transformed to a wolf, and the hobbit would ride in on the wolf. And they became the favorite duo of all the other players. They're like, oh, these two, they can go take care of this. Yeah, they would volunteer them all the time. In the game, for over a year and a half, they became the most effective group. And in the game, they seemed like best friends. It took a little extra effort, but wow, this game took on a whole other dynamic because they had both very similar and very different perspectives. That's why they couldn't stand each other.
I hate you, but damn it, I respect you.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I want to get back to your question, though, of like, how do we keep humility and how do we keep growing? I'll share a little personal thing with you guys here. Just a few of my closest friends, right? So I have a learning challenge. I have a very, very hard time reading, spelling, and writing, commonly called dyslexia. And when I was in the fifth grade, this is going to be forever cemented deeply in my psyche. One of my teachers or aides was advocating for me to get out of typing class because it wasn't doing any good, and to get back into some regular streamlined class. And my fifth grade teacher was saying that I needed typing so that I could maybe someday become a secretary, as I was too stupid to go to college. Yeah. So one of the titles, the labels that I put stick on myself all the time, and I've been working on peeling this one off as much as possible, is stupid. But in some ways, that's been a little bit freeing, because I walk into situations going, there's a lot in here I don't know, and I have to learn a lot. I'm going to work, have to work really hard. And so when I make mistakes, because I make them quite often, it's sort of like, yep, that's what I expect, because that fits that label. And so because it's already there and it's not necessarily like ego bruising, it still hurts, especially if I hurt people that I care about or just accidentally hurt people. I don't want to do that, but it gives me that opportunity to grow and to learn from it and to go, okay, here's how I can become better. Because I don't walk in already expecting, like, I am the greatest dungeon master ever. I'm figuring it out. So I think understanding that you're not all that great and you have a lot of growing to do. It doesn't matter how long you've been running games.
So Dr. Megan's point.
Yes.
You're not all that great. Or yep. Have less ego. Is that where you're hitting?
It really is. I mean, like, don't get your ego tied into one thing. You know, like, having that variable sense of self and, like, having ego identity tied to growth rather than being an expert. Because if you're saying, like, I am the expert at this thing, I run a game better than anybody else, you have excluded growth. You're saying, like, I don't need to change anymore, I'm as good as I'm going to get. And we always are in a process of becoming, of developing, of learning more and understanding more. And so understanding that you're in that process of becoming a greater dungeon master or game master helps you get better and helps you be adaptive and helps you notice when you run into something you didn't know.
And that gets back to something that Carlos said, that people over the game.
Yeah, definitely people over the game. You are in a state of becoming. We're all getting older.
That's why Lucky Giants tells us.
It's a fact. And here's the thing about this. When we were younger, it was okay to be wrong, to be corrected all the time. And we feared that. And we feared it for a long time. And it got less and less and less. And then we get to an age, we started meeting less people after high school and college. And our friends became our friends. And even those kind of dwindled away. And we have like a core group of people. And we're good at our job, and we've been working it for a long time. And, you know, we take it very personally when we make a huge mistake. Some of us that go back to college, we do great. We weren't good in high school, but somehow we go back to college and we get straight A's. And we think, like, man, I wish I could have done this when I was younger. And it's because we don't like to be corrected anymore. And when we are, we take huge offense to it, and we're angry. It's like this almost like childlike anger or sadness, and our defenses kick in for no other reason than the fact that this feeling doesn't happen to us very often anymore, and we're not used to it anymore. And if you can recognize that, and you might not recognize, here's the thing, saying it right now, you're all probably agreeing with it. In the moment, you're probably not going to recognize it, and that's okay. Give yourself a week. Think about it. Why is this a problem? You're taking a shower. You're like, oh, it still bothers me that, you know, this happens. And then think about, like, this moment right now. Let's take 3 seconds to, like, implant it in our brain. Yeah. And we're just going to think about that when it happens. And we're like, maybe it's because of this. Maybe I'm upset because I don't really get upset when people correct me and maybe just irk me the wrong way. And then over time, it's going to get faster and faster. So a week will take maybe 5 days, will take 4. Maybe, like, as you're walking down the stairs in a huff, you're like, oh, I know why I'm so pissed off. Maybe it'll happen in that moment where you'll be like, well, actually, you're right. You know, maybe that'll happen.
Ever since I heard a little joke about the word expert, I've had trouble using it. Expert, a has-been leak under pressure. So that's been something I've had a little trouble using that word. regarding like LDs, learning disabilities, and ADHD and such, very, very high levels of low self-confidence because they keep getting told, well, you should be able to do this, you should be able to do this. And they're saying, yeah, I should be able to do this, and I can't consistently do this. Some days I can, sometimes I can't. And there's an unpredictability, and you get high levels of learned helplessness where they feel like no matter what they do, sooner or later they're going to screw up, so why try? Let's just, you know what, let's beat them to the punch and let's just screw up anyway so that at least they won't be disappointed. So you
and
get that negative.
Are you throwing the spelling test in class on the first word so you don't have to humiliate yourself?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I love that one. And like, if I'm going to get yelled at either way, why am I going to put in the effort?
Yes. I know, yeah. Dysgraphia affects fine motor skills and the ability to write. And so, and I didn't even know what that was till I was in my 30s. But I went to an old school Irish Catholic school run by Irish nuns who, even though Vatican II had passed, they still thought it was Vatican I. And we all had to learn cursive. And my handwriting sucked. It still sucks. I have doctor's handwriting, and I don't have the doctorate. It's a problem. But and they literally would beat me with rulers and yardsticks to try to get my handwriting to improve. And it didn't matter what they did. It was not going to improve. Thank goodness for typewriters and later word processors and such. Well, I'm really aging myself, aren't I? But you can imagine what that does to people's self-confidence. And I saw this happening to other people, too. Do it like us. You need to conform. And there was no room for adaptation and accessibility consideration until later.
Well,
later,
so
they understood better.
Thinking about that, just yes, can
I throw in an actual tool for people?
And that's exactly where I was going with this. Is like, what's, since we're, I want to throw this to questions in just a moment. But what's one tip you can give everybody on how to be more welcoming?
I would say ritualize your request for feedback. Mm-hmm. So every single session, and that's five times a week, every single session we end with checkout questions. And sometimes it's give a spotlight to your fellow players, so it's a good way to reinforce pro-social behaviors because we work on social skills. But every single session we also say, what is something that was challenging today? And sometimes that's a way to set up them saying, like, oh man, it was really hard when I rolled all those ones. And they overcame that challenge, and that's fantastic. We reinforce problem-solving behaviors, blah, blah, blah. But it's also an opportunity for them to say what was challenging about the way that I had facilitated the game, and I'm very inviting to that, and I ritualize it. Even if we had a fantastic time, and I'm nearly positive that everybody has no complaints about the way that I facilitated it, I still ask it. So that it's not like an awkward moment where I think I kind of messed up, and then I'm like looking at the one person that I think I offended. Do you have any feedback for me? Just curious. So because it's a ritual, because every single time I'm asking it, if we break down the sort of filters around, oh no, maybe I shouldn't mention it today, I don't know. Because they'll even say, like, man, every voice you do is like a southerner. Why is every town we go into full of hillbillies? I'll be like, because that's where I'm from, and that's the easiest voice for me to do. But thanks for the feedback. I'll throw some other voices in there. You know, it's just open-ended, any kind of feedback. But it provides a safe space for somebody to give more challenging feedback in that area, too.
And you actually covertly brought up an interesting point, that asking feedback from everybody is better than singling out the one person who already probably feels excluded. That's problematic for some reason.
We have standard intake forms for all new gamers coming in. It depends on the application. If it's diversional, they're very simple. If it's therapeutic, obviously they're more involved. And they include questions about, are there any accessibility or adaptation things you have? Do you need an interpreter? Do you need braille dice? Do you need different grips to help you hold the pens? Some of these things they might not have ever considered. You know, do you have trouble writing? Is it painful to write and such? So we even offer things that they might not have thought of, because from experience we've learned that there's a lot of people who don't even know they have some of these impairments and you know, functioning challenges. Also, every game we have a very simple post-game feedback, very simple, 3 to 5 questions, frowny smile face range, and on just 3 to 5 topics. And that gives us feedback at the end of every session. And this works with 4-year-olds. They understand how to do a smiley face and a frowny face, et cetera, on how the game was. And there's always a space for comments. And everybody gets these, so we're not targeting any one person. And it really helps with that feedback loop.
So either formalized or informalized, in written format or otherwise, ritualized feedback to
right.
make it universal for everyone.
Yep.
Okay.
In terms of just getting people to the table, one thing I would say not to do is just go out on Twitter and type every brown person know that they're a precious, excited guy, and go, I'd love to have you at my table. And one thing that has happened to me here already, and I'm turning to that current year where he just goes, is come and tell me, I have such a diverse group and it's so great. Cool, I don't care. Because that's nice. You tell me literally nothing because I don't know you. I'm not at your table. And why are you telling me? Go up and do the work. Don't come up and tell every brown person you how awesome and diverse you are. Because that's nice and it's a good thing you're doing it. But are you doing it to go, look, I'm so diverse? Are you doing it because you really want more people in this hobby? Because look around the room, look around the convention, go to Gen Con. I can count the number of people of color on maybe 2 hands. Here's a bit of an exception because we're close to New York and it's a short ride. But Gen Con, oh boy. I play that game that a lot of brown people play at conventions. Some of us call it fine sprinkles, chocolate chips, filling whatever adjective you like. Because you come to me and going, I want my table to be diverse, but you come play with me. That tells me where your focus is. You're not worried about quality. You're not worried about my good time in the game. You are trying to fill out a checkbox. So cool. Go out and do the thing, but don't go and tell everyone on Twitter or come up to every brown person you might see at a convention and tell me how awesome and diverse you are. Because, okay, cool. I hear this all day, every day on Twitter. Guess what I do for a living? So
similarly, and this is a conversation I know you and I have had on several occasions, if you have to say you're an ally, then probably not.
Yep, and I talked about it on the panel yesterday that Carlos was also on. Of the people that are like, I'm an ally, and I'm like, no, you're not. A, ally is an adjective, it's an action word. You don't just name yourself an ally. And if you want to come and tell me that you're one, that is my big red flag that you are probably someone to look out for. And yes, I need to talk about the people walking around this convention with an ally badge on their ribbon. Or ally ribbon on their badge. And yes, I'm going to be grumpy about it.
To piggyback on that a little bit. Number one, Tanya, I call it sprinkles. That's my term for it, too. But also, yeah, allies, and I talked about this at the panel. I don't have a problem with the naming or anything like that, but... a lot of allies, there's a lot of people in the audience here, they are allies. They want to be good people. I don't think anyone came here to be like, I'm going to be angry at this table right now. I think everyone came here because they want to learn, and they want to be better people, and they want to know. And that is great. I feel like a lot of people get stuck in this, what do I do? What am I supposed to do? And a lot of us feel like we're waiting. We're waiting for something to happen. We're waiting to be reactionary. We're waiting to be like, okay, well, when I see it, I'm going to be, you know, we see these news stories or we hear these stories, big or small, and we're like, well, if I was there, I would have acted this way. And it's reactionary. You're waiting for this reaction time for you to jump in. An ally doesn't have to be reactionary. They can be active. Think of it like that. Think of how you can be active in your everyday life to be an advocate, to be active, and not just wait for these things to happen. You can be online or in your daily life and lift people up and not wait for someone to fall in front of you. You don't have to do that. We need more active allies.
You want to take us home?
Sure. I mean, if you're looking for tools, I guess I'll plug my series. Do that. Psychology at the table. You know, I'm trying to spread out more and talk as much as possible about how to be welcoming in just different ways and different reasons. resources that are out there, just getting conversations, because like, I think we all want to do what's best. We want to get people playing at our tables. We want to get as many people possible playing. And so some of us have great intentions, we just don't know what to do. And so that's what I'm trying to do with that series, to give people those tools and resources.
So, actually, that's actually another good question I can ask really, really quickly to everybody. What are some places that people can search out on their own to find some of the resources that you would recommend? What are the resources you would recommend? Psych at the Table is one of them.
There's a really good one called Meeples Like Us, and they do breakdowns for tabletop games around lots of different impairments. They'll give you a rundown of whether it's accessible for colorblindness, for tactile needs, and it's fantastic. If you're wanting to choose a board game to play with someone, it's really useful to know what the hang-ups are, because people who are not in any way impaired don't realize what impairments look like. And the example that I like to use is, as someone who is slightly walking impaired, people who walk just fine, and I have a lot of my family members, speaking of my genetic history, who are in wheelchairs. And people who walk just fine have no idea that this much of a step can be an impassable step. Or that I might trip a lot more than you, and that's not funny. I don't want to laugh about it. And that's just the kind of thing that people who walk fine don't notice that step at all. And that's the kind of thing that Meeples Like Us really does well about tabletop games, is because you might not realize that someone who has trouble with fine motor function can't play some of those games, because it requires you to sort through a pile of minis, a pile of little cardboard things. That's really hard for some people, and you might not realize that that game has all those little cardboard things unless you look at somebody who's looking at it with that lens. Meeples Like Us is the name of that website, Meeples Like Us.
On RPG Research, we have over 3,800 content items. So like one 20-page essay is one content item. Now, we're still moving a lot of stuff from the old server to the new server, so you might have to go to the old archives. But we have an entire section just on accessibility resources, links to other sites, your regional areas, where you can get adaptive equipment. Is this a good time to quickly go
very
over that?
Quickly.
Yeah. So something as simple as a dice tower can be really helpful for people who have trouble with gripping and such, because you can just take the die and drop it in instead of having to rattle it and shoot off the table, etc. That can help a lot very easily. Medical tape can be helpful for LARP and other activities for being able to grip things a little better. Different pen holders. There's different styles. You know, you can get just a thick pen at you know, Staples or whatever. Little thicker grip for pencils, and then for this actually sits on there and lets you just move it around so they can still take care of updating the character sheets. There's an effort working on a Braille character sheet that they're doing out of wood and such. And then, of course, the Dots Project has all these different Braille dice, which they've kindly donated. And if you want to get one of the cards earlier, it tells you how to read the Braille on it.
Do you have a list for this stuff on RPG Research?
I have. All of this is in different areas on RPG Research. We're still reorging the site. All of this is on there. Big foam, oversized, brightly colored dice, even using images for kids and such, or people with certain impairments from brain injury. So lots of different things, and none of these are not expensive. These are things that you can just have handy, we keep handy with all our groups, so that you can make it more inclusive and accessible for a lot of different needs. A brightly colored, high contrast dice also can help for visual impairment.
Any other tips for folks, resources that they might find useful?
Yeah, I think watch like Twitch, like watching people of with disabilities or people of color play the game, like, can help you rather than I don't know if you're gonna do research or anything like that, but like people, that's the end goal, right? So like let's watch and communicate with people, and like real world experience cannot be beat.
Okay. All right. Well, so we had more information. Sorry, but no questions. However, a bunch of us will likely be hanging out outside across the hall, so we are not blocking traffic. I pay attention. the enforcers respect them. But thank you all, and hopefully you found this valuable. Take a picture, follow everybody on Twitter, all these people are wonderful, resourceful, amazing human beings.
I would also like to thank everyone for not mentioning the fact that I'm wearing the same shirt that I'm wearing. some white shirt, I'm like Superman.
I just thought you took that picture this morning.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I'm like Kim Possible. Yeah, right.
It's just only on this one look, and that's what you do.
I wanted to thank you for bringing up ASL as an option.
Yes.
Because I work in the medical field and I'm trying to run ASL for my patients.
Good.
I hadn't even thought of doing it for a year.
Right.
I'd never thought of it.
Yeah. We've got positions both for volunteers and paid positions for signing game masters.
I mean, I don't know anything. I know, like, very
it takes time, but you can learn. We run regular study groups every week, too, so.
I mean, I'm working with my patients, so it's like.
Well, when you have to pick a second language in college, pick ASL if you're going to work in the medical field. It's just going to help a lot of people.
So. Thank you for bringing it up.
You bet. Thank you. Make sure you get a card or brochure and stuff. So.
Adam and Abby, you're looking for deaf teens.
Yes.
R-I-T-N-T-I-D.
Okay. Well. Okay, R-I-T. Okay, there's R-I-T.
Yeah,
N-T-I-D. N-T-I-D. Okay. All right, I'll talk to him. I'm on the other end of the country, but we're trying to help people all over the world, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, you can add it as a resource, too. So feel free to. These are Braille, teach you to read Braille off the dice, just the numbers in Braille and such from the Dots Project. And you can try out the different dice and such. Now, those are, I recommend against those. Those are not very good. These are the Dots Project. They're a lot better quality. So check out the difference. These have all kinds of flaws. So you want to watch out for that. We didn't have time to talk about it, but yeah. So the Dots Project, they're doing a great job with the higher quality, and they've got it for different games. They've got them for Fudge, Fate, and they've got a great adaptive four-sided that's not going to take your foot out.
Yeah.
So, and then you can get larger dice towers that can handle the larger Braille dice too. So, lots of great options there.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Please. Please.
Yeah, let's go out there that way. I want to.
Yes, we work for a lot of different Muscular Dystrophy Association, Montessori schools, various public schools for the alternative schools, rehab centers, drug rehab, physical rehab. Incarcerated youth. We're actually going to be, somebody's doing a documentary of us working with trying to get gaming into prisons. So a wide range of populations. And we're always looking for others to work with.
Because I was doing clinical at a VA center near where I live. And they were talking about recreational therapy.
Yes.
And, they didn't like bring up anything like this.
That's strange.
Yeah. And so it's like,
was it just an intro? Maybe they just didn't want me to cover? Because if it's recreation, it's under recreation therapy.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But they just didn't, I mean.
That's strange. But, you know, different programs have different focus.
Yeah, we did a large rotation at the VA, and for it not to have been brought up at all.
That's odd, yeah.
I know. So I wonder if.
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody needs to talk to that program director. Well, got cards, got brochures, and of course the website. So feel free, they can contact us. We're always happy to help provide info and help people expand their programs.
Thank you.
I will talk out there, yeah, just in case anybody wanted to like take a picture or grab stuff.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'll talk to you out there. Okay, but go ahead, if you want to grab something, now's the time. Yes, okay, so here is a sumo grip just available at regular. Okay, then this is the next step up where it's a little thicker grip like that. So you put your finger through and you can work with a pencil or a pen. So that helps a little bit more. And then this is the most stable where it sits on a flat surface and then you just slide it around. Yeah, yeah, isn't that wonderful that they have, and these are not that expensive, so. Reasonably, they're not perfect. It is challenging. They're trying to work on improving it. So these, the Dots project, are much better quality. There's some others out there that are really bad. These are. They've got holes in them. That's a six-sided. I mean, that's almost impossible to read. Yeah, these are an example of really bad ones. These are okay. These are usable. They're good enough, and they're working to improve the manufacture and make them even better. So they're worth it. They've been made it so that people can really be involved. For everything, yes, it's wonderful. Yes,
exactly.
Well, muscular dystrophy, we did a boffer LARP. And so some of them can't raise the boffers. Yeah. So some of them, and we made lances so they could just strap them to their wheelchairs and charge, that's nice. Which was awesome. They were cavalry. We had 21 kids in wheelchairs. It was awesome. Yeah.
You might have to take a picture of the one that's like really good for writing.
Yes. Right here. One. Yeah.
And what is that called?
You
said the suit, like sumo? Like, is that a company?
Oh, no, that's just this thick one. Okay. Here. This is Ableware.
Ableware?
It's the organization. Okay. They have various devices.
I think that would be like super helpful.
And that's W-A-R-E. Able, and then W-A-R-E. So.
You mind if I mean, I can help. I was going to talk to you anyway,
yeah,
but
please.
If you want me to help, like, help you put stuff away.
Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, but I mean, people are out there.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask more about the certification for REC.
Okay, yeah, CTRS, yeah.
Yeah, I remember looking into it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know how, like, sometimes you look into the regs or something, and it's like...
And they change.
Yeah, it looks like something must have changed, because now it looks like it would be easier for me to get. Before, it looked like it would have been...
You still need to get either a bachelor's degree and an internship and 2,000 hours experience.
But does it have to be...
Or 5 years experience in the field.
I mean, I have like...
And then you take the test.
So that was my question is like... So when I studied for my licensing test for counseling,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I know I'm not the best test taker. I know, you know, I have problems here and there, so I kind of, like, studied for, like, a year
right.
before taking it.
Yep.
Do you know of any, like...
self-study?
Yeah.
Yes, there's a bunch of books and CDs and websites. Yep, they've got all of that.
Is it all of them?
I did everything audio. I couldn't read. Like,
right. Yeah, there's websites that have videos and audio, and some are better than others, but they are out there. You can check out, I think it's recreationtherapy.net or therapiesrecreation.net, something like that. And they've got, like, a lot of courses, and some are free, some are paid. So those are all really helpful.
How much do you think something like that will rack up? Like the size?
Well,
I don't know how many of my credits are going to
have. That's really variable. That's a really hard one to
generalize. I know. I was trying to look at, it's hard, but on my laptop with me today that I have at home, so I was trying to look it up here and there.
So APTRA Online, A-T-R-A, so American Therapy Recreation Association, that's the professional organization.
Yeah.
Wherever it starts. And the certification is CTRS, the Certified Therapeutic Recreation Specialist.
And then the spot for the audios and the trainings?
Is either recreationtherapy.net or therapeutic recreation.net. Yeah, but all that should be linked to from APTRA Online.
So, I mean, right now, I think when I was looking at the new reg, I was like, wait a second, I might be able to transfer my credits.
Oh yeah, no, a lot of credits. Yeah. $2,000 is relevant population experience. Right, so yeah, you can reapply from, like, I have nursing aid and
Okay.
How long have you been doing tabletop?
Yeah. I played Dungeons and Dragons, and then
you can do like
one shot.
You
can
do nothing else.
And rent out space conversions.
Would you say that there's like a good way to go about that?
I would say that's the way to go. I would say art.
I mean, it's a really general.
Okay. Yeah, I would say art, like whatever your art is, and lifting people up more than like trying to. So one thing I never felt. So I was in a band. I played. I toured. I was in. I was. One of the things that led to our success early on, or later on, I guess, is that we never tried to catch ourselves with people that were popular already or above ourselves. I always tried to organize people at our level. Blow up your spot. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, just blow up your spot. Don't worry about people that are if I could just get noticed by this person, no one cares. That person doesn't care about you. It's kind of like a one in a million that, like, they take you in their wing and then they sell you to everyone. But just blow up your spot, find people that like you, and just like grab arms. And everyone will start to notice. It's impossible not to notice that. We can talk for like 5 seconds, and it's just like broadsword. You just start spider webbing like that, and with those people up. And you will definitely meet your experience.
Now, it doesn't pay as well as like a physical therapist. The base is doing 35 to 65 an hour for a therapist. A lot more than 122 hours. Right. This will, insurance companies, as long as their policy has it, and they can make it also building, which also supports the team in a stipulation that, like, people long term care and rehabilitation, they're required to be able to alternative therapy interventions, and their policies are put in place. So that's billable as a kid. For other professions, that's more challenging. I guess you couldn't say I'm using DNA.
I'm not a problem.
Across all of them.
I mean, for the insurance agency.
It totally depends. We're trained across all, so we're trained in pediatric, geriatric, mental health, physical disabilities, rehab. We work in all the different departments. So when it comes to insurance, you're going to have to see what's covered. You can try under each category. I know, this is the insurance game. When it comes to the insurance game, that's just the way it goes.
That's why, so when I was looking on it online, they were like,